Thanks to our listeners calling in with more information. To recap an update, there are reports some sort of attack is underway in Baghdad. Reporters are saying a squadron of F-15 fighter bombers has taken off from a base in central Saudi Arabia heading north, and the fighters are designed for long-range bombing at night. We also have heard that there are sirens in the city of Baghdad. CNN is reporting similar outbursts of gunfire over the city. On a phone call from Baghdad, CNN's John Holloman also reported anti-aircraft fire in the air over the city, but he said no planes had been heard. The reports come one day after the Tuesday midnight deadline for UN-approved action against Iraq for the August 2nd invasion of Kuwait. There is no confirmation from the Pentagon or from the White House at this stage. Stay tuned.
Trying to keep the communists in order. Just remember when you're sleeping in your beds, they're only 2 days' drive from the Texas border. How can a country large as ours be scared of such a threat? Well, if they won't work for us, they're against us, you can bet. They may be sovereign countries, but you folks at home forget that they all want what we've got, but they don't know it yet.
Tra-la-la-la, 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 tra-la-la-la. We're making a world safe for
candy and our guns, and our corporate muscle marches in behind us. But freedom's just another word for nothing left to sell. And if you want narcotics, we can get you those as well. We help the multinationals when they cry out, protect us. The locals scream and shout a bit, but we don't let that affect us. We're here to lend a helping hand in case they don't elect us. How dare they buy our products and still they don't respect us.
Tra-la-la-la, tra-la-la-la.
You're listening to WUSB in Stony Brook, where we're trying to keep on top of the latest developments in the Gulf, where it appears that war has broken out. We now join WBAI with their coverage. We will be going to the teach-in in New York City at around 7 o'clock. Let's hear what is going on WBAI.
Now, Fitzwater is in his office saying nothing. He headed over to the Oval Office with the president. He said he's not sure what's happening, but as soon as he is sure, he will brief reporters. We will see about that. So right now, at least the reports from the reporters in Baghdad is quiet, that the air raid, that the explosions are not going on at this moment.
It's sort of frightening that the only information that can be garnered is not from the official sources, not from the people that should be asked these questions and should be ready to answer them, but instead from reporters who just happen to be in a place where they hear noise outside their hotel room. And that's really the only reports that we've been able to bring you so far. It's just been reporters that happen to be standing there, hearing the noise, seeing the flashes.
And right now, CBS is reporting that cruise missiles have just been fired at Baghdad. That's CBS reporting that cruise missiles have just been fired at Baghdad. In just a moment, we're going to be talking with, we're going to be going to Samori Marksman and Ramsey Clark and others, and we're going to be bringing you continued updates throughout the night, so please stay tuned. Again, F-15s have been launched from Saudi Arabia. CBS is reporting that cruise missiles have been fired at Iraq. Right now, the Gary Shepard of ABC said that there was an air raid going on. There was explosions on the ground aimed upward, but he says right now it is quiet. So we'll be keeping you in tune. I'm Amy Goodman with Julie Cohen and Dred Scott Keyes. Thanks so much for listening, and we will continue throughout the night.
This is the WUSB Peace Movement Update, bringing you the latest information on local efforts to stop the Gulf War before it starts. This Saturday, from 12 noon until 1 p.m., there'll be a vigil in front of Congressman George Hochreckner's office. That's on the intersection of Route 347 and Wireless Road in South Setauket. That's running from 12 noon until 1 p.m. this Saturday. Also this Saturday, there's a national demonstration in Washington, D.C. There'll be a bus leaving from Westbury, and if you want more information on that, call 338-4662. That's area code 516. On the 26th, which is a week from this Saturday, there's another demonstration in Washington, D.C., and there'll be buses leaving from Southampton at 4:30 in the morning, Westhampton at 5 a.m., Patchogue at 5:30 a.m., and Port Jefferson Station at 4:30 a.m. For information on those buses, call 744-2745, 369-2171, or 744-2442. There will also be a bus leaving from Stony Brook at 3:30 a.m. That's on Saturday the 26th. And for more information on that bus, call 689-7290. All those area code 516, and that's for the demonstration in Washington, D.C. on Saturday the 26th. The Peace Movement Update is heard every hour on the hour on WUSB Stony Brook. If you have information on demonstrations, marches, vigils, or prayer services, call us at 516-632-6498. And it's times like this that we really depend on our listeners to give us information. Let's go back to WBAI.
In the Persian Gulf.
Teams should not be permitted to invade, occupy, and brutalize their peaceful neighbors.
March on Washington.
Apparently some announcement has just been made from the Pentagon. Stay with us. We're attempting to clarify this. Okay, we've got the announcement here. The U.S. military in central Saudi Arabia has announced that war with Iraq has begun. That's an official announcement now. The U.S. military in central Saudi Arabia has announced that war with Iraq has begun. In just a couple of minutes, we'll be joining WBAI for the teach-in in New York City, as well as any other kind of coverage that they will be bringing us. Forgive us for sounding flustered here. We are flustered. It's a lot coming in at once. If you have access to particular networks that obviously we don't have access to here, please pass along anything you might hear to us. Of course, we will be flustered on the phone as well. Our number is 632-6901. But right now, we can report that it is official, war has begun. So any information you can pass on to us at WUSB regarding anti-war demonstrations, prayers, vigils, marches, we need to hear that. And the number to call is 632-6498 for information on that. Let's go to WBAI now for the teach-in.
Director of Public Affairs Programming for WBAI, broadcasting at 99.5 FM in the Greater New York metropolitan area. Tonight's broadcast is part of Pacifica Radio's ongoing effort to bring listeners around the country the latest information about the developments in the Persian Gulf, the domestic implications of United States actions in the Gulf, and the growing national opposition to the war. For the next 2 hours, you'll be hearing from people coming from different backgrounds, perspectives, and even countries, all with a deep commitment to prevent a war in the Persian Gulf. We now go to the Parsons Ballroom of the New School for Social Research, where tonight's host and moderator, Samori Marksman, is standing by.
Virgin Islands. We welcome all of you to this national teach-in here from the New School for Social Research in New York City, sponsored by WBAI Radio FM, which is part of the Pacifica Radio Network, in conjunction with the Coalition Against U.S. Intervention in the Middle East. We have, we think, a very impressive lineup of speakers, many of whom have been veterans in the anti-war movement and the pro-justice movement in the past decades. And as I said at the outset, we are going to have to shift things a little bit around in light of the news which we have received in the past few minutes. We are going to be starting the program off with a message from British parliamentarian Anthony Benn, who was scheduled to be with us this evening, but as you might well expect, the situation is no different in England than it is here in terms of the involvement of that government in the Gulf and the reaction of the people and legislators to that involvement. Indeed, as we heard today, there was a major debate taking place in Parliament. The British Parliament voted 10-1 for war. Of course, similarly did the French Parliament yesterday, and your own wonderful institution in this country similarly did so on this past weekend. But Tony Benn couldn't be with us, but he did send us a message, part of which we will share with you before starting the program off formally. I should like, just like, by way of starting things, let you know a little bit about him. He is or was a member of every Labour Party cabinet since 1964. In 1977, he was president of the European Community Council of Energy Ministers, working with ministers in the USA, USSR, and OPEC countries.
This is WUSB in Stony Brook. We're listening to a live presentation from New York City, a teach-in from the from WBAI, the New School for Social Research in New York City. This announcement, as we have said a few moments ago, war has officially broken out in the Mideast. We've just gotten an announcement from the Coalition for Peace in the Middle East. There is an emergency meeting tonight at 8 p.m. That's in just about an hour's time. They're located at 919 Route 25A. And I'm not sure if that's Setauket, Stony Brook?
That's Stony Brook.
That's in Stony Brook, that's 919 Route 25A.
Nichols Avenue, Nichols Road and 25A.
Nichols Road and 25A.
The first house on the right when you make a left turn.
Okay, and the phone number is 689-7290. They're having an emergency meeting in just about an hour's time to discuss the war which has just broken out. We return now.
And the enormous activities that are going on in Britain against the war, I felt as an elected representative I had to stay here and participate in debates in the House of Commons, in the vigils, in the huge demonstrations that are being held. And yet the link between the American peace movement, which is reasonably well reported in Britain, and the peace movement in Britain and across Europe is a very important one. because I believe there is an overwhelming majority of people worldwide against the war. And in Britain, even though our parliament voted last night by nearly 10 to 1 for war, and only 57 of us stuck out against it and voted against it, all the opinion polls, the indications of public opinion, imply that the government here, the Conservative government, have not got 50% of the population with them. We are fairly evenly divided. And people may ask, why is it that the British government should be going along so uncritically, and for that matter the British Labour opposition so uncritically, with the policies adopted by President Bush? I think there are reasons that need to be understood, and they're certainly not shared by the British public. First of all, there is the so-called special relationship. It is an illusion. It goes back to the days of Roosevelt and Churchill during the war, when it was an important link. But in recent years, that so-called special relationship has rotated around one thing above anything else, that the United States supplies the nuclear weapons which Britain pretends are independent. And if there was a break between London and Washington at this critical moment, from the point of view of the United States government, I think there is a fear among the cabinet, and it is shared, I'm afraid, by the opposition, that the supply of nuclear weapons would stop, and therefore we would not be able to boast that we were equal partners in a nuclear alliance. That's the first factor. I think the second factor is that there is a feeling among conservatives of gratitude for the United States under Reagan, when Mrs. Thatcher was our Prime Minister, for the support given during the Falklands War. Thirdly, and this is a strange historical factor that needs to be thought about, 100 years ago, or the beginning of this century at any rate, the world was run by three imperialist powers. One was the King of England, one was the Kaiser of Germany, and one was the Tsar of Russia. And they had one thing in common. They were all grandsons of Queen Victoria. And that Victorian imperialism, which dominated the world and from which the United States broke away, of course, at the time of the American Revolution, that Victorian imperialism is now coming back again. Because when President Bush or others speak about a new world order after the Cold War, they're not talking about a United Nations world order. They're talking about the reimposition of white control over the Middle East and the Third World. You see, Britain had an empire. When I was born in 1925, 20% of the population of the world was governed from the House of Commons, where I'm sitting at this very moment as I talk to you. And in Egypt, we had a base, a huge military base, at a place called Tel El Kebir from 1888 until 1956, and then we finally agreed to go, and within a few weeks we were back again at the time of the Suez War. And now Britain is no longer, of course, anything other than a medium power. But I think they hope, or many people in Britain hope, that America might fill that vacuum and that we might piggyback on top and somehow return to some of our old glory by supporting the United States in what I believe, truthfully, is primarily an imperial mission. I say mission because that's the language that's used, as if it was a sort of educational exercise. Actually, it is a war for oil, a war for power, a war for a base, and the fact that Iraq has invaded Kuwait is almost incidental, because after all, the United States invaded Panama and Grenada, Turkey invaded Cyprus, nobody did a damn thing about it. So one of the first elements in understanding where we are and why is, I think, a historical perspective, and also a realization that whatever you may think of Joe Stalin, and I was no supporter of his domestic policy, it was the presence of a very powerful Soviet government that put a stop to imperialism and provided some sort of international cover for the great liberation movements that swept through the world after the war, and which ended the British Empire completely. India became independent, Pakistan became independent, Nigeria became independent after a long and bloody war, Zimbabwe emerged out of colonial Rhodesia, and that was made possible by the fact that there was one power there in the world that was hostile, to the United States and Britain, and therefore saw in that those nationalist movements an opportunity to provide support for what they believed then was the social and political revolution. Now, at the end of the Cold War, there is a vacuum, and the United States aims to fill it. And they aim to fill it by setting up a balance of power where instead of the three grandsons of Queen Victoria, there's President Bush, Chancellor Kohl, and they would like to think Mr. Gorbachev, and to reimpose that power on the world. If there is a war, and I'm speaking before the moment when conflict begins, if it is about to begin, it will be horrific. Hundreds of thousands of people will be killed because a million men face each other across that frontier, and they've both been armed by the same arms manufacturers. They have the most sophisticated modern weapons. If the Iraqis respond by setting fire to nearly 1,000 oil fields in Kuwait, the oil will burn for 6 months to a year and could create an ecological disaster of unimaginable effect. Undoubtedly, there will be heavy casualties among American and British troops. If the price of oil rises to $100 a barrel because of the burning of the Middle East oil fields, there will be mass famine in the Third World because they will not be able to afford to buy oil, which they need for their development. And, of course, the legacy of bitterness, even if the war were to end quickly with a so-called surgical strike that toppled Saddam personally, what has happened is going to have permanent effect. There will be a legacy of hatred and terrorism, if that's how the war is going to be fought after an American military victory, which will go on for a very long time. And we have to stop it. But not just in a negative way, we have to think to ourselves, what is the proper basis for peace in the Middle East? And I think there are some conclusions that are fairly clear already, that first of all, it is an area that belongs to its own people. There's no reason why the United States should act as a policeman in the Middle East, or Britain, or anybody else. It is an Arab region, and no good saying they don't handle their affairs very well. Neither did Europe, when you think of two horrific wars that cost over 100 million lives. So we are no ones to preach the Arabs on how to handle it. Secondly, there must be justice for the Palestinians. For 23 years, the United States government has done all they could to prevent the Palestinians establishing a state because of their strategic alliance with Israel. There must be control of the arms manufacturers. I was talking to a former Egyptian foreign minister the other day, and he told me that in Cairo they had had a seminar on the Crusades, and the first thing they discovered was that when the Christian Crusaders attacked the Islamic leaders, the European arms manufacturers supplied arms to both sides. Nothing has changed in 1,000 years. We must try to see the oil companies do not exploit this very rich area for their own benefit. We've got to see that Cyprus is returned to its legal status, which was, of course, without the presence of Turkish troops. There's a lot to be done, but the UN has got to do it, not the United States, and it's got to be done by the people in the region. And a war will set all that back, horrifically back. So when we hear about this new world order, let's think of a world order run by the people of the world for the benefit of the people of the world, government of the people, for the people, and by the people, if I can quote Abraham Lincoln, and not a return to Queen Victoria's view of how the world should be run. These are some of the issues. And in Britain, the opposition is fantastic. I've had 8,000 letters, which is quite a lot in our book. I think less than 90 have been hostile. The rest supportive. Women are against the war. The old boys who remember the last war are against the war. Young people, particularly school pupils in their 8 to 10 and 12 who know about the environment, young students who fear conscription. There is a powerful force, and out of this terrible tragedy we might build an international movement for peace and social justice which would stand us in good stead when next a crisis of this kind occurs. Good luck. Thank you for inviting me to your teaching. I hope to keep in touch. And I believe that what is being done in the United States by the peace movement is an inspiration to people everywhere. Please keep going. We need you. And we'll try to help as best we can ourselves. There is a big march on Washington on Saturday, the 19th. And we're hoping that everybody is going to be there. I had been asked to go, and I had hoped to go. But we have big demonstrations in London, too, and other cities. But the more people that can be on the streets in all the major capitals of the world on Saturday, the better the chance of giving the governments a message not to launch this war, and to recognize that most people in the world want peace and justice and want the UN to be the Congress of the peoples and not just a court of some new emperors taking charge of the destiny of our planet.
My name is Gabrielle Gemma. I'm a coordinator of the Coalition to Stop U.S. Intervention. We want to let people know, if they haven't heard before, although we do not have much information at this time, that the criminal United States government, the criminal Pentagon, has begun to bomb in Baghdad. We, the people of this country, those who have no stake in a racist war, in a war for oil profits, for bank profits, need to send a message to the President and to the Congress that if this war continues, there will be no peace here at home. We must pledge ourselves We make this pledge that in every city, in every rural area, in every town and every community, we will engage in demonstrations, occupations.
And you're listening to our live teach-in from the New School, Responses to the War That Has Begun in the Persian Gulf. U.S.-led forces in the Persian Gulf attack targets in Kuwait and Iraq, and, quote, the liberation of Kuwait has begun. This, according to the White House. Spokesperson Marlon Fitzwater told reporters President Bush will make a statement to the American people at 9 p.m. tonight. We will certainly carry that live. Fitzwater said the liberation of Kuwait has begun. In conjunction with the forces of our coalition partners, the United States has moved under code name Operation Desert Storm to enforce the mandates of the United Nations Security Council. So Desert Shield, or as they had called it, Desert Shield, has become Desert Storm. It is official. The air raid attacks on Baghdad have begun. Now back to Gabrielle Gemma at the New School.
1-2-4-6. That's 2-1-2-7-7-7-1-2-4-6. The Coalition to Stop U.S. Intervention in the Middle East has called this radio speak out to send a message to President Bush and Congress, to Wall Street and the Pentagon, that we will not have peace at home with an imperialist war abroad. Everywhere across the country this week and around the world, there have been massive demonstrations. High school students have walked off in New York City, off their campuses today, and trashed a recruiting station. Yes. Walked off. Yes. High school students at LaGuardia High School, Martin Luther King, and in Clifton, New Jersey, walked out. And we will be reporting to you on the worldwide demonstrations that have been taking place and that will be taking place on January 19th in Washington, D.C., in San Francisco, in Louisiana, in Houston, Texas. What is the reason? That's what everyone wants to know.
Again, you're listening to WBAI. This is the latest news brief. The attack on Iraq and Kuwait began at 2:30. The city was quiet. Tracer bullets were coming from the presidential palace. Attack planes took off earlier on from Saudi Arabia, fully loaded with missiles. Anti-aircraft fire has escalated. The bombing has intensified. A lot of fire is seen in Baghdad, but no aircraft seems to have been hit. They are flying at a high altitude. Again, Desert Shield has become Desert Storm. This, according to Marlon Fitzwater, the Pentagon does confirm that the war has begun in the Persian Gulf. We will keep you updated going back and forth from here to the response to this war down at the New School with Samori Marksman.
And this is WUSB in Stony Brook, where we're broadcasting the teach-in. Again, an announcement. There is an emergency meeting tonight of the Coalition for Peace in the Middle East. That's starting in just about 45 minutes, 8 o'clock p.m. That's at 919 Route 25A in Stony Brook. Their phone number for more information is 516-689-7290.
Just as they did at the beginning of the century, the conflict between Iraq and Kuwait Could have been.
An update from Saudi Arabia. Air raid alarms are going off. Sirens are going off all over Saudi Arabia. Back to the news school.
Started before Iraq's invasion of Kuwait. Months before August 2nd, the Pentagon carried out sophisticated computer war games pitting U.S. troops against Iraqi soldiers. Since August 2nd, the United States has bribed and bullied governments around the world.
CNN has just reported that the planes attacking Baghdad are so high that Iraqi anti-aircraft cannot hit them. That report coming from Cable News Network.
Did not represent the people of their country any more than...
Another Kedin from WBAI Newsroom. Reporters in Saudi Arabia are told to get off the platform where they are and get into air raid shelters immediately. Right now in New York, activists are heading down to Times Square. Activists and non-activists, people who are upset about the war, are headed down to Times Square right now to protest.
In Washington on January 19th, Congress went tamely along with everything that was done. Even the so-called opposition in Congress, which voted that what they could have been doing, they did not do. They could have called upon the people. They could have... If they think we will forget... Just because they voted no when they knew the Congress as a whole would go along with Bush. If they think we will forget what they did not do for 5 months, they are wrong. And what is the U.S. invasion about in the Arabian Peninsula? It's a war for spoils, for booty, for profits, for the oil companies and the banks in the United States and Western Europe that hold $900 billion in petrodollars stolen from the poor and oppressed people in the Arab world. This is a war against the Arab people. It's a war against the Arab people who want to and have a right to be independent, to deal with their own peoples and problems. It is a war of the wealthy against the poor and the oppressed around the world and right here at home. Bush and Congress have called for sanctions, which is an act of war, a military blockade that has already caused the hunger, sickness, and death of an Iraq of many thousands, especially children.
And we now bring you White House spokesperson Marlon Fitzwater, who is speaking right now. WBAI cutaway from the News School.
Eastern Standard Time, Operation Desert Storm forces were engaging targets in Kuwait and Iraq. President Bush will address the nation at 9 o'clock p.m. tonight from the Oval Office. I'll try to get you more as soon as we can. Thank you very much.
And that was White House spokesperson Marlon Fitzwater. CBS is reporting that a steady stream of F-15 fighter bombers were taking off from central and eastern Saudi Arabia. A pool report filed from Saudi Arabia said a military spokesperson in central Saudi Arabia said the fighting started when the first F-15 fighter bombers took off at about 10 to 1 their time, local time, our time, about 10 to 5. Colonel Ray Davies, chair maintenance officer of the base, said this is history in the making. He added, it's absolutely awesome. The ground shook and you felt it. Colonel Ray Davies finally said, we've been waiting here for 5 months now. Now we finally got to do what we were sent here to do. Back to the News School and Gabrielle Gemma.
If we know that the cause of the Bush administration is not for democracy, but for its own evil ends of domination and profit, then why should we support any policy, be it military or economic, that is calculated to impoverish the third world? And at what price here at home? How many tens of thousands of Arab lives is President Bush going to kill in the Middle East? How many tens and thousands of our GIs, our children, our sisters and brothers in the Persian Gulf, who are African American, Latino, Asian, Native American, and poor and working class whites in the Persian Gulf? It's not Jeb and Neil Bush who are in the Persian Gulf. At what price? It is already costing $100 million a day, and with the war on, the Pentagon estimates it will cost $2 billion a day. What about jobs, education, AIDS research, housing, tear down the jails, let's have jobs. What about all these things we need? No, this money will be used instead for this imperialist war. On January 19th in Washington, D.C. and in San Francisco, tens and thousands of people will come out, must come out, to answer this war. There will be workers, busloads, from the Daily News strike, from the Greyhound strike, from every community across New York City who will be joining us there, hospital workers, from South Carolina, from North Carolina, from 35 states will be in Washington on January 19th. And the demonstration in San Francisco will also be tens and thousands. And we urge people who are listening right now to join that demonstration, as well as in Houston and in Shreveport and in Seattle. Before we go on to our speakers, I especially want to thank the Disarm Education Fund, and we want to thank WBAI and Pacifica, which has not only reported the news, but has aided in the fight against the war in a way that no other radio stations have done. As you listen to this program right now, we ask you to take just one moment. Go to the phone and call this number, 1-900-44-NO-WAR. The $10 charge on your phone bill will send a letter to Bush, to Congress, to bring the troops home now. That number again is 1-900-44-NO-WAR. And again to repeat, that the National Coalition to Stop U.S. Intervention in the Middle East has been joined by the National Campaign for Peace in calling for an immediate demonstrations at Times Square in New York City tomorrow evening at 5 p.m., and demonstrations will take place in every city across this country. The next speaker will be someone that you have heard speak at literally dozens, if not hundreds, of rallies, radio shows, on television, who stood up among the first to oppose this war, former Attorney General of the United States, Ramsey Clark.
Must still always love each other. That's all we have. One man against the will of the nation and the will of the world has moved inexorably for months and months toward a war he wanted. George Bush will go on the radio or television at 9 o'clock tonight to say how proud he is that he's now killing men, women, and children in Kuwait and Iraq at the cost of some American lives as well. God help us all. It's been 23 years since Martin Luther King, Jr., speaking in a city we love, New York, said the obvious, that the greatest purveyor of violence in the world is his own government, the United States of America. And here we go, unleashing it right now. Remember the words Tomahawk missile? They're flying toward school children, mothers, old people, men, women, and children halfway around the world. Aircraft are bombing Iraq, perhaps Kuwait. We won't know the details, perhaps ever, because in this land of the free and the home of the brave, we are constantly deceived, lied to, and the facts and truth are concealed. Norman Thomas told us that the first casualties of war are always truth and freedom. And don't we know it?
And we're cutting away to bring you this live update. ABC report is reporting that planes are now visible heading towards Baghdad. The lights of the city are out. Flashes are seen all over the sky. Sirens are wailing all over the city, as well as in Saudi Arabia, because Iraq, it is now being reported, is counterattacking in Saudi Arabia. It looks like in Baghdad, oil refineries have been hit and possibly some military installations. We will see if that is the case soon. So once again, the air war is going on over Baghdad. Oil refineries have been hit. And in Saudi Arabia, there are air raids all over. Reporters have been told to get into air raid shelters. We don't know what's happening with the people of Saudi Arabia, but Iraq is counterattacking, it is reported, in Saudi Arabia. And now back to the teach-in with Ramsey Clark.
Hundreds of billions of dollars annually for sophisticated methods of killing people year after year, while millions of infants have starved to death. Starved to death. And hundreds of millions of overwhelmingly beautiful, dark-skinned people have known the pains constantly of hunger and have suffered through their short lives the misery of physical and mental handicaps from the lack of food, while we have spent billions on arms and we have this huge capacity to destroy life. George Bush, all by himself, decided to invade Panama on December the 20th, 1989. He did not consult the Congress of the United States in accordance with the Constitution. He did not consult the United Nations. He only consulted his military people. He wanted to assert dominion over the Western Hemisphere in a far higher degree than President James Monroe ever dreamed of when he promulgated what we've called his doctrine. He wanted them to know that we have sophisticated means of killing people. They wanted to test out the stealth bomber, we're told, on a drug bust. Pretty handy piece of equipment for that sort of thing. To be easily tried in Bed-Stuy or Harlem, couldn't it? All it does is kill people. We say very precise, but let me tell you, it's about as precise as a tornado. Nobody knows where it's going to touch down and who it's going to kill.
Okay. And you're listening to Ramsey Clark, former U.S. Attorney General. Right now, this news brief from the WBAI studios. President Bush has ordered U.S. fighter bombers to begin a massive attack on Iraqi forces in Kuwait and Iraq tonight. White House News Secretary Marlon Fitzwater has announced the liberation of Kuwait has begun under the codename Operation Desert Storm. Fitzwater confirmed to White House reporters shortly after 7 o'clock that the U.S. forces, along with their allies, had attacked. And again, the attack is going on over Baghdad, and as well in Saudi Arabia, it looks like Iraq is counterattacking. And now back to Ramsey Clark.
United States, and he violated international laws as clearly as Saddam Hussein did when he invaded Panama. And we don't know at this moment whether George Bush is responsible in that invasion for more Panamanian deaths than Saddam Hussein is Kuwaiti deaths. Hundreds and hundreds, thousands. He would have done precisely the same thing in the Persian Gulf if he could have physically. Isn't that pretty obvious tonight? And hasn't it been all along? He had what the military might call a logistical problem. It's a long ways away. Iraq has a big army. It takes time to move your forces in. But from the very beginning, and before the very beginning, before August the 2nd, It's almost like Grenada. For two or three years, we tormented, taunted, threatened, waiting for the right moment to invade Grenada. We did the same thing with Libya. And we shouldn't forget what we did there. In the middle of the night, in a surprise attack against sleeping people in Benghazi and Tripoli, sophisticated bombers using laser-directed equipment killed scores of people from nine nations that I know of, civilians overwhelmingly, and tried to assassinate a foreign leader. I also have to concede, I don't believe in polls, but the polls after that bombing of Libya show that President Reagan reached the highest level of his popularity in 8 years in the White House. We have to think about that, you and I. But I want to get back to where we are now. I tell you, it has been clear, and it couldn't be more clear than it is tonight, that from the very beginning, George Bush has intended to employ the military violence of the United States against Iraq. And he has used every wile, every deceit, every falsehood, and every cover-up that he needed to do it. He led us early in August in believing, after having acted unilaterally in defiance of law, that his purpose was, quote, wholly defensive. That doesn't sound quite so bad, does it? The only problem was there was nothing that needed defending anymore. King Fahd never claimed that he was about to be attacked. When he called King Hussein of Jordan and woke him up on the night of the invasion of Kuwait, he never suggested that he felt threatened in any way. And why should he if the dispute had been between Iraq and Kuwait? And he did not ask George Bush to send troops in until after George Bush had sent troops in, just as it happened in Grenada, when the Governor General, Sir Paul Scoon, 4 days after we had killed more Grenadians than we lost in World War II in proportion to population. Sure, it's a statistical trick, but it's mathematically accurate. We killed more Grenadians in that invasion in proportion to their population than we lost in World War II over 4 years of war on all fronts. And nobody seemed to care. We'd hit a little thing like a mental hospital and wipe out 16 human beings, and they too are as worthy as you or I or our children, or the ones we love the most. They are life on earth. It's all we know. He planned from the beginning to move in, and he maneuvered in every way he could. He told the Congress he had absolute power. He didn't have to consult them. He would do what he chose. He told the United Nations the same thing, while he was rushing at the same time to get every possible resolution out of them that he could. The people of the planet had created the United Nations in the wake of World War II in the hope that they could end the scourge of war. And George Bush, in the fall of 1990, made the United Nations an instrument of war. He did, you know. And he did it by criminal acts, among other things by bribery. We really have to pay attention. How long had we owed a couple of $100 million to the United Nations to pay its employees and other little details? Electric bills and whatnot, phones. And he paid them about $150 million in the middle of this crisis. We want to be friends, don't we? Here's your money that I've owed you for years. The People's Republic of China, on the Security Council, had communications with most of the world cut off after Tiananmen Square. And he said, you vote with us on this or abstain, and we will open dialogue and negotiations with you and bring you back into the family of nations which you need and want. And in addition, you know that $140 million loan at the World Bank we've been blocking? It's yours. Be my guest. Just do what I say. That's a bribe. $7 billion in debt. Egypt to the United States. Now, I'll tell you, I wouldn't want a penny of that money back. because I know the condition of the Egyptian people is misery, hunger, want, and homelessness far beyond anything the peoples of the United States have ever experienced. But they owe it. And President Bush, unilaterally and without consultation, to get Mubarak on our side at the UN and elsewhere, said we'll forgive a $7 billion loan, and he had no power to do it. It was a form of bribery. He told Ethiopia, I'll give you more money to kill your fellow Africans in another country, military aid. He threatened Yemen, and they had the guts to stand up to him. We don't need your aid if the price is our independence. He offered the Soviet Union in his time of disintegration $7 billion in food and other things if they'll come along and prostitute their national integrity by voting for war against Iraq. And we know they did. And it goes on. Zaire, what would you have expected from that government when the United States puts pressure on it? Colombia, money, bribery. When you look at the Constitution of the United States, you see that bribery and high crimes and misdemeanors constitute impeachable offenses against the President of the United States and all civil officers of the United States. I tell you that we have evidence, and there's a lot more evidence that we don't have and can be secured. That President Bush, since the end of the Iran-Iraq war, or shortly thereafter, when we were conveniently supporting Iraq against an enemy we considered greater because of its size and because of what our government would call its fanaticism, and I should mention because of a hostage matter that had transpired about a decade earlier, we had supported Saddam Hussein in that war. It was an awful war. It cost the lives of over 2 million, probably, very young men, decimating a whole generation of males from two major countries, beautiful countries on this planet with us. But we were supporting Saddam Hussein then because it was convenient, just as the Soviet Union was, just as Kuwait was, just as the Saudis were. Once we had gotten through with that little business, which Henry Kissinger had described in his hope that they would kill each other. In other words, that there would be triage there that would so weaken them that neither could resist our will. We began to turn on Iraq. And we have government documents that show we were working with Kuwait to destabilize and provoke Iraq. We know, of course, that Secretary Baker went before a committee of the Congress and said that's a matter for Kuwait and Iraq. We will not intervene. We know that Saddam Hussein then called the U.S. ambassador in Baghdad into his office and said, what is this your Secretary of State means when he says this? And we know what she says, that we consider your dispute with Kuwait to be a regional matter primarily between Iraq and Kuwait, and we will not intervene. Be our guest. And before he could get started, George Bush began moving arms into place. And we know it. He told the press this 48 hours before he got around to writing a letter to the Speaker of the House of Representatives. But you look at the Constitution and you see that we, the people, delegated all power over war and peace to our elected representatives in the first branch, the legislative. And they have been totally paralyzed for a long, long time. And they barely activated right at the end, far too late to have any free choice. And even then, because they knew the people demanded it. Overwhelmingly, they knew the American people demanded it. The Senate voted 52 for the president's war to 49 against. You remember the Tonkin Gulf resolution? that cost 1 million Vietnamese lives and 60,000 American lives. The vote was 98-2. Wayne Morris and Ernest Greening, two real Americans that had the courage to vote against that war. And you go to the House of Representatives on the Tonkin Gulf Resolution, and the vote was 414-0. Not one person willing to stand up and say, why do we want to kill all these Vietnamese people? And you remember how many boats there were in the Tonkin Gulf that were supposed to cause the attack? None. The naval officer who made the last survey over the Gulf said in his autobiography, which came out about a year or so ago, that flying over the Gulf, he saw, quote, no boats. And here we go again. The President of the United States of America has committed crimes against peace. That is the first order of crime under the Nuremberg Charter. It is a crime committed by those who cause war. And that's what he's done. He has planned and prepared war crimes and is apparently inflicting them tonight. You cannot kill civilians or non-combatants in wartime or peacetime without committing a crime. And he's doing it. And he is committing violations of our Constitution and his surveillance and his arrests and his planning for a lot more and his interference with our First Amendment rights to speak freely, to know what's going on over there. Every word we're getting out from what's happening there comes from the Pentagon, and we know it. There's only one force on earth that can stop this thing now. It's the American people. You and I have the highest obligation, as does every person who lives here, to do everything within her power to stop this war immediately. And as we struggle with all of our energy, with all of our vision, and with all of our compassion, let's think constantly of the tens of thousands, the hundreds of thousands, of Iraqi and Kuwaiti men, women, and children that we are threatening to kill and in the process at this moment of killing in violation of the ultimate law of nature that thou shalt not kill. We need to move out of here tonight onto the streets, and we need to stay on the streets until the war is over. Look what's happening in Rome. 200,000 people on several days out on the streets of Rome. Look at West Germany. The same thing's happening. Look at France prohibiting more demonstrations in Paris because they couldn't control them, they say. Look at London. Look at Ankara. Look at Islamabad. Look what's happening in the Philippines, where people are moving with weapons toward Clark Air Force Base in Subic Bay because they don't want to be participants anymore. We need to move to the streets throughout America, and we need to move across America to Washington, D.C. We need a permanent camp by the White House and the Capitol Hill of thousands and thousands of Americans until we can end this war. We cannot rest a moment. We need to move from this moment towards Saturday, the 19th of January, to create the biggest demonstration that has ever happened in America, and we can do it if we will. It only requires us to move. It is imperative that we start right now, onto the streets in the morning. There'll be times when we're supposed to be someplace and we'll try to get there, but let's be someplace else if we can't. Let's show everybody around the world that the people of the United States oppose this war and intend to stop it. This says, The Coalition to Stop U.S. Intervention and the Campaign for Peace have called a joint demonstration now at Times Square and tomorrow at Times Square. Let's be up there now and tomorrow and every day. And let's move on from there and be constantly on the streets until we stop this thing. And once we've stopped it, and it has to be quick, our technology is devastatingly powerful. Let me tell you what George Bush wants to do. He wants to knock them out so fast it looked like Rambo. And then you know what he wants to do? He's already said it in the press today. They are planning to indict Villalobos in El Salvador. He's the comandante. And as they went after Noriega, they want to send the Marine Division down there to capture him and end the war by killing a whole bunch of Salvadorans. He wants to establish across the world a Pax Americana. If you think that's good for people, go to the Philippines and see how good this century has been to them. It's misery, violence, hunger. If you think it's been good for the people of Liberia after 170 years of colonialism, let me tell you, there's not a more violent, there's not a more hungry, there's not a more sick place on earth than poor Liberia with its beautiful people. Their infant mortality before this civil war was 140 out of 1,000. Their biggest employer was Firestone Tire and Rubber, which gave you crumbs to live on. And their literacy was 30%. Let's move on from here tonight to Times Square and in the morning on Times Square, and let's move across the country and let's call everybody and do everything we can. And remember that after that, and after the 19th, that we're only beginning, because we're going to do what a great soul from Harlem told us we have to do. Langston Hughes. Oh, yes, I say it plain. America never was America to me. And yet, I swear this oath, America will be. Let's get rid of this war machine forever. Let's take the government over for the people's good, social justice, and peace.
And that was former Attorney General Ramsey Clark speaking at a live teach-in at the New School for Social Research here in New York.
This is WUSB in Stony Brook. You're listening, as the BAI said, to Ramsey Clark, Attorney General, former Attorney General of the United States of America. We just got some word in off the AP, and that is, at this time, Iraqi attack on Israel, the U.S. conducts its night assault on Iraq. Iraq has threatened to attack Israel with chemical weapons in response to any U.S. military move in the Persian Gulf. Israeli's radio station says Prime Minister Yitzhak Shamir and Defense Minister Moshe Arens are at home and receiving reports on the American assault. Iraqi's capital is being hit by air attacks, and the U.S. says a military operation to liberate Kuwait has begun. In Baghdad, CNN reporter Peter Arnett says it appears airports and military installations are being hit. There are reports that tracer fire can be heard on the ground in Baghdad. CNN reporters also say they can hear what may be bombs in the distance, but there are no obvious signs of explosions in the cities. Reporters say air raid sirens are sounding over the Iraqi capital, and CNN John Solomon says Baghdad is now pitch black, and he says he can see smoke. In Saudi Arabia, there are reports that air raid sirens are going off constantly, and the International Hotel in Dhahran, Saudi Arabia, AP News reporter Tony Winton, in an urgent voice, said over a satellite pool circuit, Washington was seeing activity in the hotel. Winton repeated these several words several times before the circuit went dead. At the White House, presidential spokesman Marlon Fritzwater says the operation, codenamed Desert Storm, began at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. The president will speak and address the nation at 9 p.m. this evening.
The sky just roared as these jets took off, and all you could see after the afterburners went out up in the air towards the end of the runway were these little twinkling red lights as these bombers headed north. John Bascom at an air base in central Saudi Arabia.
And John Bascom is the pool reporter. He is with ABC News. And the latest reports we have is that there were not only air raid attacks over Baghdad, it is believed that some oil refineries were hit as well as some military installations. We also have news from the TV networks that Iraq is counterattacking in Saudi Arabia. Sirens went off all over Saudi Arabia, as in Baghdad, for the war. We'll be breaking into this live teach-in throughout the hour to bring you updates. Please stay tuned.
And that was an update from Amy Goodman at WBAI. And I'd like to say, as one of the media workers, as one of the progressive and revolutionary media workers in this country, it is indeed an honor and a privilege to be working with such dedicated media people, dedicated to the mission to bring the people the truth as it develops, when it develops, where it develops, and to get the voices of the people whom this affects directly to you, the people. So you need to support WBAI. We must thank the new school for having offered us this space to carry out this live teaching. Our next speaker is Dr. John Jeffries, the Dean of the Graduate School of Management of the New School. Please give him a big hand.
Thank you very much for attending tonight. I think I want to focus my brief comments on a couple of very important themes. These themes will both be popular and in a very important way unpopular. The themes have to do with democracy. The themes have to do with articulating that democracy, and the themes have to do with articulating for ourselves what democracy will be in the United States. We've been told that this war, as are many wars in which the United States is involved, is about democracy someplace else. Clearly, it is about democracy in the United States and the character of democracy in the United States and the future of democracy in the United States. It's very important to keep in mind a brief history lesson at the risk of pushing this teaching metaphor a little further, that democracy in the United States itself has a rather curious history. The Constitution that many people have referred to over the past 2 months is a Constitution that, for all intents and purposes, initially pertained to certain segments of the United States population as opposed to the population at home. It's a very interesting kind of democracy in the United States, a kind of phasing in democracy, phasing in over time. Initially, this Constitution had primarily to do with men, white men who owned property. Later on, those white men who were propertyless engaged in protest, so they too were brought in. Much later after that, women in the United States, white women in particular, after engaging in protest, were also brought under the umbrella. Shortly after that, we had European immigrants, through conversations with the democratic ideal, brought into the agenda. In our very recent history, in the modern period, we had the sons and daughters of slaves being brought into the political democracy. So our first understanding of the teaching is to get a handle on this notion of democracy. Second point, that's democracy in the political sphere. The people of the United States have always suggested quite strongly that democracy in the society means a societal democracy, not only in the political sphere, but in the economic sphere of the country as well. And those of us who've been involved in that kind of conversation have clearly been involved in conversations that suggest that democratization of the economic sphere clearly is something that we have to be involved in, something that we have to be taking apart for ourselves. So when thinking about how we will be engaged in the protest around this particular presumed struggle for the democracy, we have to understand that what brings us here as a unified group are attitudes and opinions that within the group, and here's the unpopular part, that there are strong differences among us within this group. And to come to coalition is good because we have an opportunity to come around an issue. But when we come, we have to come with recognizing those differences and being about democratic participation and conversation of those differences, so that when we talk about foreign policy and what we're going to do after the troops are brought home, we have something democratic to say about how the society will be reorganized once that task is established. So criticism of foreign policy implies responsibility within the protest. So at the same time, it's complicated now. We no longer have the luxury of this uniform ideal about participation. It's participation with responsibility. And I would urge each and every one of us to be thinking about, as we're talking about moving forward, stopping the war, to also be thinking about that when that happens, what will the character and the structure of the United States society will be like, so that we can then have conversation and positive direction about democracy in the United States. Then we no longer confused about the importance of democracy and what it stands for. Let's be real. Let's be honest. We don't have the luxury to...
In conjunction with the forces of our coalition.
This is the WUSB Peace Movement Update, bringing you the latest in local and national efforts to stop the Gulf War now that it has begun. There will be a demonstration, a national demonstration in Washington, D.C. this Saturday, the 19th. And buses will be leaving from Westbury. You can get more information on that by calling area code 516-338-4662. If more buses become available, we will let you know on this service. The following Saturday, the 26th of January, there will be another demonstration in Washington, D.C. There will be buses leaving from Southampton, West Hampton, Patchogue, Port Jefferson, and Smithtown. Southhold. And the phone numbers to get more information for that are all area code 516-744-2745, 369-2171, and 744-2442. Also on the 26th, there'll be a bus leaving from Stony Brook, and for information on that, call 689-7290. Every Saturday, there is a vigil at George Hotbrookner, Representative George Hotbrookner's office. That's located at the intersection of Route 347 and Wireless Road in South Setauket. The vigil starts at 12 noon and will be taking place this Saturday and every Saturday until the war is over. Some phone numbers that may be of interest to people. Senator D'Amato can be reached at 212-947-7390. Senator Moynihan, 212-661-5150. Representative Mrazek, 516-673-6500. Representative Hotbrookner, 516-689-6767. And Representative Downey, 516-661-8777. And in Connecticut, Senator Lieberman, 203-240-3566. Senator Dodd, 203-240-3470. If you need other phone numbers of elected representatives or their addresses, you can call the League of Women Voters at 516-549-4171. You can reach the White House by calling area code 202-456-1111. Their main switchboard number is 202-456-1414, and President Bush's office is 202-456-2858. And if you'd like to send a mailgram stating your opinion on the Gulf War, you can call 1-800-257-4900, ask for operator 9790. If you have information on peace vigils, marches, demonstrations, prayers, or any updates to the information that we have broadcast here, please call us and leave the information at 516-632-6498. The WUSB Peace Movement Update is heard every hour on the hour with the latest information to stop the war. And we're receiving reports that the fighting over Baghdad has intensified and that the Iraqis are counterattacking. Also, indications are that British jets are involved. We now rejoin WBAI an interview with a congressman. I don't quite recall the name.
And that's where I would wish that our militancy is different this time from the Vietnam War. Every indication is that there are very serious bombings and attacks which would only lead to a prolonged situation, and now we can turn our attention to hopefully finding a quick solution so that we can get out of that part of the world and return home.
Hello, Congressman?
Yes, sir.
All right. You are, of course, represent here in New York City as Congressman in the Bronx, a very large Latino population, mostly Puerto Rican, but, of course, across the country there are many other Latinos and, as I said, people of color right there on the front lines fighting this war. What might you want to convey to them across the country?
Well, I would think that we have to continue to oppose this kind of military action. We were hoping that we would give sanctions a chance. We who support that action lost. We did not win this, and that's why the bombings have started today. The debate in Congress was one which was very interesting in the sense that the president had already told us that he felt he had the constitutional right to do what he did tonight without the support of Congress. He went to Congress anyway, or Congress actually went to him, and some members like Representative Solars and so on, presented the resolution that would give the president the right to use force, and it was masked under the UN resolution. Well, I was not going to support it either way, and I explained the many reasons why I didn't. One was the fact that I felt that we could give sanctions a chance, and that if you were a believer, assuming that you're a believer, that we had a right to be there, then certainly the right we had to be there, we had played out well, we had shown force, we had stopped Saddam from invading, Hussein from invading Saudi Arabia, we had protected Israel at this point, and we were strangling Hussein economically and militarily. There was no need, in my opinion, to go into the war. Secondly, I was troubled by our so-called allies. I was troubled by the fact that we were working with Syria when we were told not long ago that Syria was a terrorist nation.
Mm-hmm.
I was troubled by the fact that many Puerto Rican and other groups were calling me, telling me that their friends, their uncles, their children could not wear the Star of David, could not wear the Holy mm-hmm. Cross as I wear around my neck, because it offended the Saudi Arabia government, and it offended me that the troops were sent over there and were not even allowed to pray the way they wanted to pray, just as they were perhaps nearing death. Then it also upset me that we were involved in supporting countries which, after our involvement is over, will continue to have oppressive governments, kingdoms, and all kinds of situations that I do not approve of and that I don't think we should be sending men and women to die for. And thirdly, and perhaps just as importantly, representing the poorest district in the nation, I am concerned about the kind of money we're spending on that war when $30 billion every 5 months, which is what we've been spending, could very easily fight the wars that exist in the South Bronx, the war against AIDS, against homelessness, against crack-addicted babies, in fact, against poverty.
Mm-hmm.
And for those reasons, I voted against it, making clear that I understood well that the president had us over a barrel, that once he declared war, once the war began and took its effect on people, that then he would have us over a barrel, because the Congress then will find it very difficult to curtail aid and to curtail moral support for troops which could be stranded in the desert through no fault of their own.
All right, let me ask you this, Congressman. You said that you were against the war, are against the war, but you're behind the men and women who are fighting this war 100%. A massive rally in March is going to take place against this war this Saturday. What conflict do you see between what's going on, I mean, the anti-war movement and this criticism that they have for many people saying that that really would only help to undermine the morale of men and women who are fighting this war?
Well, I try to make that point clear at the beginning because in my head, for the first time, it's very clear, and that is protesting is proper, it's necessary, it's our right, and we should engage in it.
Would you be there, Congressman?
Excuse me?
Would you be there this Saturday?
No, I'm not going to be there this Saturday, but I'm going to be involved in some protest along the way. I was in the most important protest, which is I was one of 54 congressmen who took the president to court to try to force him not to start the war. We lost that, but I will be involved. That's not the point. I'm on the right side on this issue. I'm just concerned that we in our protest attack the people that we shouldn't be attacking. I don't want people to say that that goes under the heading of sending Hussein a message that we're not united. What I think we have to be clear on is that your protesting should be against the policies of George Bush. They should not be against the guy down the block who was a member of the National Guard and is now somewhere in Saudi Arabia with a rifle, a lot of sand, and praying that he stays alive.
Indeed.
That person is not our enemy. That person is our brother and our sister, and I will not do anything to hurt that person.
Indeed. I certainly didn't mean to infer that you were not against this war. As I said in your introduction, you have been against this war from the very beginning and quite eloquent about it, and you've been on this air talking about it. Speaking of...
And there's something, Santiago, that we also have to understand. There's going to be a protest every 2 hours in this city and in this nation.
Right.
Not everybody who's against the war will attend all of them. There's no... Listener test here as to which protest march you attend. For instance, today, this is now about the ninth interview I've had today, and there are still about another six interviews left for tonight, both in Spanish and in English, on live radio and TV programs where I will put out my protest against this war. We each have a different role to play, but I wouldn't certainly want to think that the audience believes that the only protest one can mount is to attend whatever next rally has been organized.
All right. Let me ask you this, Congressman. Henry Gonzalez of Texas, head of the Banking Committee, has called for President Bush's impeachment for, quote-unquote, high crimes. Would you be calling for his impeachment as well?
Hello?
Did you hear that at all?
I didn't. I'm sorry.
All right. Henry Gonzalez of Texas, head of the Banking Committee, has called for President Bush's impeachment, as you know. Are you going to take a part of that? Are you calling for his impeachment as well?
Well, you got to remember something, that I can't talk out of two sides of my mouth. I was one of only 54 who had either the stupidity or the courage to take the President of the United States to court. I took him to court because I wanted to force him to come before Congress and ask Congress for a declaration of war. I had to then live, in my opinion, with whatever the result of him coming to Congress would be. That doesn't mean I would approve of it, but I had to accept certain things. The court said that my lawsuit, or the lawsuit we presented, was premature, and that we could not in any way force the president to come to Congress. The president perhaps outsmarted a lot of people by, in fact, coming to Congress by having a resolution voted on. I voted against the resolution. The resolution received 250 votes. Now, is the president right in this action? I think he's wrong. Is the president being fair and just in this action? I think he's wrong. Is the president miscalculating the era that we're living in? I absolutely think so. But did the Congress give the president what amounts to a declaration of war? Absolutely, and everybody who voted for it knew it, and everybody who voted against it knew it. So on what grounds to impeach the president now becomes a very serious problem,
yes,
because he got the declaration of war that he wanted from Congress.
Indeed. All right, Congressman Sejano from the Bronx, I want to thank you very much on a very busy evening being with us here at WBAI.
Thank you very much.
And as we said earlier, Congressman Sejano has, from the early stages, the very nascent stages of this, been very eloquent against his against the war, and we thank him again for being with us. And now back to Amy Goodman, news editor here for WBAI.
And in just a minute, we're going to go down to Michio Kaku at the News School. Just these late reports. WINS has just reported that the UN Security Council was not aware of the military action. They only learned about it a short while ago while testing a new television set that was being installed. And now the Pentagon is denying that Saudi Arabia is being counterattacked by Iraq. Iraq has not reacted to the Allied attack 90 minutes after the outbreak of war. This according to a Saudi official emerging from an underground air raid shelter after the all-clear sounded. The official told Reuters there was a danger of an Iraqi attack, but there was no evidence of any retaliatory strike by Baghdad. It was reported earlier on the networks that they thought that that Iraq was counterattacking. Earlier today, Marlon Fitzwater warned the international press to leave Iraq. He said things are going to get worse than expected. And now down to Michio Kaku at the News School.
Carnage as a spectator sport. And that is what George Bush is doing now. The carnage of Hiroshima, 100,000 people vaporized, is now being visited on the people of the Middle East. But there's one thing that Bush fears more than the Scud missiles, the MiG jets that Hussein has in his possession, the 5,000 tanks under his control. There's one thing that Bush fears more than the power of Saddam Hussein to inflict casualties on U.S. troops. The thing Bush fears the most is the power of the American people. The power of the people, as shown tonight. As shown tomorrow, as shown every day until the troops come home. I say, let the Arab people decide their fate. Not the tomahawks, not the nuclear weapons, not the aircraft carriers. Let the Arab people decide their fate. Let the people of Palestine decide their fate. Let the people of Grenada decide their fate. Let the people of South Africa decide their fate. Let the people of Haiti decide their fate. Just remember that George Bush can start a war. That doesn't mean he can finish that war. Kennedy and LBJ started the war in Vietnam. It was the people that stopped that war in Vietnam. And we're going to stop this one the same way that history was made by then. Back then, history was made by the power of the people, because back then it showed that the power of the people is greater than the man's technology. Nothing less than the impeachment of George Bush is to be called for by the American people. Nothing less than the impeachment of George Bush. Nothing less than the power of people. I ask the people here, I ask the people to join those marching in Paris, those marching in Bonn, those marching in Tokyo, those people around the world, because we make history, not Tomahawk missiles. We are the makers of history. You know, it's sometimes said that George Bush acts as if he had the mind of the president of an oil company. And that's right. He is the former head of the Zapata Offshore Oil Company. And for 20 years after that, he made more money being an apologist and a lobbyist for the oil company. And what mind does Dan Quayle have if George Bush has the mind of an oilman? Quayle has the mind of a draft dodger. You know, there's an ancient story told over and over again of children asking their parents, "Father, mother, why are the people cheering for those troops going to die in war? Why are there so many parades? Why are the old men clapping?" And the father and the mother says to the kid, "It's because these old men know that they're not going to go to war." That's why Quayle, I saw him on TV the other day, he was smiling, he was clapping like these old men, the draft dodger mentality. He's not going to go to war. He had Quayle had a press conference last year and said that we must spend our precious resources to send American men to the planet Mars because the planet Mars has canals that we must explore. Mars has no canals. Quayle has no brains. That is a scientific law. And what I'm saying is that Quayle only needs one thing to make a fool out of himself. Just one thing. That is a chance. Quayle was on TV saying we must protect our oil, as if it belongs to us because there's an oil crisis. There is no oil crisis. There is a profit crisis. That is what the real crisis is, a profit crisis on the part of big oil. And then Dan Quayle said there's an oil gap, a gap between what we expect and a gap of what actually exists. The only gap is the gap between the ears of Dan Quayle. Let me tell you right now that as the bombing raids continue, it's not going to be such a pushover fight. It is the tiger versus the eagle, with the United States having a command of the air, but wars are never decided in the air. The Vietnam War was not decided in the air. Wars are never decided in the air. Wars are decided by people. People marching in the streets, people fighting in the streets. It'll be a war decided by people, not by equipment. Let me say that George Bush has pulled every single trick out of the book. He said that Saddam has to be stopped because he'll get nuclear weapons within a year. There are 20 pounds of enriched uranium salvaged from the 1981 Osirek raid that Hussein has in his possession. The physicists at the International Atomic Energy Commission saw the 20 pounds of enriched uranium, stated that it's impossible to fabricate a weapon with that because it is being monitored by the government. What George Bush has discovered is a new law of physics. What Dan Quayle has discovered is a new law of physics. We physicists will revere the great titans of physics, Isaac Newton, Albert Einstein, and Dan Quayle, a founder of a new law of physics that Hussein could assemble an atomic bomb within a year. But there is another lie being perpetuated on the people, and that is that we have to go because to protect the oil. Who created the oil dependency of this country to begin with? Who stopped solar power? Who stopped alternative energy? Who stopped conservation? If Ronald Reagan had the mind of a defense contractor, George Bush had the mind of an oil president. Just remember that this oil crisis was created by the oil companies, like a drug supplier wanting to keep the drug addict continuously dependent on cheap drugs. You just can't say no, as Nancy said. What George Bush wants to do is keep the United States dependent on cheap oil. And that's why we have to go for alternative. Alternative oil, alternatives to oil. Solar power. We have to go for biodegradable fuels. We have to go for environmentally safe so that our children will remember that we were the generation that banned the pollutants that made our rivers unsafe, that made the water unsafe to drink and the air unsafe to breathe. Just remember that the oil companies are the ones who created this crisis. They're the ones who kept America like a drug addict, dependent on this cheap kind of oil. In summary, I want to tell you that wars are never decided by machines. Wars are decided by you, by me, by the people in Times Square, by the people marching in Paris, by the people marching... people around the world who are saying no more war, no blood for oil, because a people united can never be defeated. A people united can never be defeated. The 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 people united
can never be defeated. No blood for oil. Bring the troops home now.
We are asking people who are organizing against the war across the country to come out and demonstrate tonight in New York City, where there's a demonstration going on right now at Times Square, and tomorrow at 5 p.m., also at Times Square. We know that people across this country are coming out this evening and tomorrow in emergency demonstrations against this war, and we'll be going on January 19th to Washington, D.C., San Francisco, Houston, Louisiana, Seattle, and across the world. There'll be massive demonstrations on the 19th. We say to you, the time has come to escalate our struggle against the war with sit-ins, civil disobedience, and stopping business as usual, whether it be troop transports, recruiting stations, or transportation. We do this not because we want to, but because we have to stop this war by any means necessary. Our next speaker is Yanis Makoucs from ACT UP, an AIDS activist.
And you're listening to a live teach-in from the New School, and that was Gabriel Gemma. But first, we are right now we're going to interrupt to go to Phyllis Bennett. Over here.
This is WUSB in Stony Brook.
Of the current hostilities in the Gulf, there is speculation that one possibility might be that there would be a break of some hours, perhaps a day even, imposed by the Bush administration on its attack against Iraq, designed to allow what they would call a breathing period or some such thing, to see whether there would be a change in the Iraqi position. There was speculation about this before the attacks began, that one possible scenario might be a very sharp and brutal strike, which would then be cut short to allow for what the Bush administration would hope would be a rethinking of the Iraqi position. The Secretary General left the United Nations a few minutes ago, issued a very general statement expressing his sorrow, but without a substantive statement saying that he did not yet have enough information. I was with the Cuban ambassador just a few minutes after the hostilities began, and I have a brief statement from him on his assessment of the significance, and I'll try and get the quality so that our listeners can hear that.
Well, I think that it has begun what was envisaged since August. The whole process since the beginning indicated that the U.S. was going to war against Iraq, not to liberate Kuwait, because so far there is nothing coming from Kuwait. Kuwait continues to be occupied. What is happening is that people is being killed in Baghdad. Baghdad is very far away from Kuwait territory. Civilians are being killed for sure now. Americans may be dying at this very moment also. I think that we are starting the beginning of the most irrational chapter of this very sad story. I am afraid that it is just the beginning of what we always said was going to be a very catastrophic event, for not only in terms of human sufferings in the area on both sides, but also in terms of economic consequences for the entire world, and also in terms of the ecology.
That was Cuba's ambassador to the United Nations, Ricardo Alarcón,
Phyllis Bennis, thank you very much. She'll be joining us live later, and she'll be reporting if the UN Security Council decides to meet later. Thanks so much, Phyllis.
Thank you, Amy.
And now we're going to go on for 1 second to David Sears, who is down at Times Square, where people are gathering in protest. David, can you hear me?
Yes, I can, Amy.
What's happening there?
When I arrived here shortly after 7:30, there were only about 20 or 30 people. They were marching in a tight circle around the recruiting station. At about 7:45, a march of about 200 or 300 people joined them. The march apparently started somewhere in downtown Manhattan. I spoke to people who joined it around 8th Street. The march has been very loud and very militant. The police arrived shortly thereafter and started setting up barricades. They actually set up barricades in the middle of Broadway and 7th Avenue, making a circle around the recruiting station. It seems now that a lot of the demonstrators have split off and they may be headed over to the UN. I'm not sure at this point, but it's gotten a lot quieter in the last 10 or 15 minutes. Amy?
Okay, Dave Sears, thank you very much for joining us. In just a minute, we're going to hear from Peretz Gedron in Israel. We're going to be putting that up on the National Satellite. Robert Knight.
This is Robert Knight. We've just spoken with Jerusalem, with one of our correspondents there. At the moment, things seem peaceful. We'll be having more details on that. Of course, one of the contingencies is that the Iraqi government has said that it will attack Israel if it is first attacked. We await word on that, and we'll later be speaking with other technical experts on the actual conduct and next stages of the war. Robert Knight here with Amy Goodman.
And now, for just a minute, we'll be going back to... And now, for just a minute, we'll be going back to the New School for Social Research.
No access to even primary levels of health care or insurance. I think in particular of many of our Latina sisters in Brooklyn and the South Bronx who cannot even name the infections that are killing them. It is the enforced lack of meaningful alternatives for the majority of these groups that swells the military with cannon fodder for the war machine. AIDS has always been a crisis of color, yet rarely identified by the media as such. The onus of reclaiming our lives as well as our rights lies equally with each of us, and we must all resist the lure of competing with each other for resources as if our oppressions were rivalries. Rather, we must all be in D.C. on the 19th and out of the closets and into the streets every day following until the last of the troops have been withdrawn not only from the Persian Gulf but from every occupied territory and recognize each other as a unified, compassionate community of resistance against profit-driven war and racial slaughter because imperialism equals genocide just as surely as silence equals death. Thank you.
Money for AIDS, not for war.
Fight AIDS, not Iraq.
Right. Fight AIDS, not Iraq. Our next speaker is Michelle Payne from the African American Coalition Against Intervention and the students at Baruch College.
This is WBAI.
This is WUSB in Stony Brook. The time right now is 8:31. We're in the midst of the Gulf crisis at this very moment, and at this time we have an update from our newsroom director, Jeff Singer.
Good evening. I'm Jeff Singer with the latest WUSB news update. This is what we have in right now. Iraq's capital is being hit by air attacks, and the United States says a military operation to liberate Kuwait has begun. In Baghdad, CNN reporter Peter Arnett says it appears airports and military installations are being hit. There are reports that tracer fire can be heard on the ground in Baghdad. CNN reporters also say they can hear what may be bombs in the distance, but there are no obvious signs of explosions in the city itself. Reporters say air raid sirens are being sounded over the Iraqi capital. And another CNN reporter says Baghdad is now pitch black. He says he can see smoke. Meanwhile, in Saudi Arabia, there are reports that air raid sirens are going off insistently. At the International Hotel in Dhahran, Saudi Arabia, AP Network News reporters say have said an urgent voice. Washington, we're seeing activity in a hotel. And then the reporter repeated these words several times before the circuits went dead. Meanwhile, at the White House, presidential spokesman Marlon Fitzwater says the operation, codenamed Desert Storm, began at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, and President Bush has announced he will address the nation at approximately 9 p.m. Right after that address, we will try to get a transcript of that and read that to you. Meanwhile, in Jerusalem, the Israeli army is advising Israelis over Israeli radio to stay at home and open up the kits containing their gas masks. There are no immediate signs of threatened Iraqi attacks on Israel, however. Iraqi leader Saddam Hussein has threatened to strike Israel if Iraq was attacked by the United States-led forces in the Persian Gulf. In another report that we have, CNN so far says there are no reports of United States planes that have been destroyed. There are no casualty figures as of yet. At the Pentagon, officials say indications are very, very positive that the airstrike is moving according to plan. More locally here, UN Secretary General in New York City, Javier Perez de Cuellar, is expressing sadness. In a statement read by his press secretary, he said an hour and a half into hostilities, he has little details about what's happening, but he says he can only say he's saddened by this onset. And in London, Britain's defense ministry said British military units are involved in the initial action in the Persian Gulf War. The ministry said in a brief statement, the multinational forces in the Gulf, including the British units, have been involved in the action. There's no word on which British units are involved. The British Domestic News Agency Press Association says the units are believed to be Royal Air Force Tornado fighter bombers, which had been earmarked to destroy Iraqi airfields and radar installations. And on a closer-to-home human note, peace activists say they're horrified by the war. The Reverend Bob Moore, executive director of the Coalition for Nuclear Disarmament in Princeton, New Jersey, says he's grief-stricken because he can't help but think about the civilians in the Middle East who will be affected by this war. Melinda Knapp of East Brunswick, an organizer of a support group for soldiers' families in central New Jersey, says people she's been speaking with since Tuesday's deadline has passed are divided on what they're hoping for. She says one side's saying they don't want a war, while the other side says the attack should take place so the war can end before support is lost for their loved ones. Knapp says some families are plain angry with the government for putting them in a position to defend or condemn President Bush's use of military force against Iraq, but they're not supporting groups protesting the military buildup. Members of the New Jersey Operation Desert Shield support group operating out of Sussex County said they're glad President Bush has finally launched this war, and one of the group members told the group tonight that if she were President Bush, she would have attacked in October. So we have a lot of different opinions on what's going on. We do have a call-in program coming up later this evening with more information. Cindy, she's giving me the sign that it's going to be going on at 9 p.m., that's right during the president's speech, so we may cut into that program to let you know what the president had to say. I think we're going to go back to WBAI programming in just a minute. And now back to Cindy.
All right, we're here in the main studio. I got Morty on the side of me. He's also got a special announcement about a meeting that we are going to make for this evening.
Yeah, the Coalition for Peace in the Middle East is having an emergency meeting this evening. It should be taking place right now. They're located on 919 Route 25A. Telephone number is 689-7290, 689-7290, and to get there, you head north on Nichols Road. As soon as you hit 25A, make a left turn, and it's the first house on the right side.
Okay, folks, and the time is running. You hear the clock ticking, and that means you better get to that meeting real quick. As we said, the war in the Gulf has begun, and we're here at WUSB 90.1 in Stony Brook to bring it to you live by the moment, and we're getting up-to-date coverage here at the station from anybody and everybody who wants to call here. The number is 632-6901. You can also leave a message on the hotline, 632-6498. And as I said, this is an alternative radio station, and we'll take any reports and air them that we can lay our hands on.
Thank you very much. Thank you. We'll be right back.
and I didn't sleep for the whole night. And tonight, right after I finish speaking, I'm going home because I can't take it. Because I really feel like I'm going to have a breakdown. You know, we could have put an end to this thing, but for some reason we didn't. But I think now it's the time to do it. Show up tonight, show up tomorrow night, or tomorrow during the day, whenever. Show up the 19th, especially the 19th in Washington, D.C. Because that can make a difference. We've made a difference before. I wasn't there for Vietnam because I'm only 23 years old. But I've heard of Vietnam. I've heard of Vietnam, and I heard that the American people put an end to this war. And I think we can put an end to this one. But please, do it. Not for anybody else, but for the children. Because children are dying over there right now. Maybe we forget about this, but children are dying. Just a couple of years ago, they made a song about "We Are the World, We Are the Children." What happened to that song? You know? I mean, people forget so easy. What happened to that song? And one message I want to send to George Bush, hands off Haiti, because the people of Haiti... Here I am speaking for myself, for our country, but I'm not afraid to say it. But hands off Haiti, but George Bush, because he might be the next one for you, but you won't take that one. It's not going to be that easy. It's not going to be that easy. And one thing I also want to say, that we also have a fight going on in Haiti right now for democracy, a fight for democracy, a word that we've heard from the American people. We haven't heard it from anybody else but from these people, from you sitting right here. That's where we heard this word from these people here, from the people who's listening to me right now. And we're fighting for that democracy in Haiti right now. And I think it's going to be a success. But I could have been in Haiti right now, but I thought it was an obligation for me to be here first to put an end to this war, because I didn't go. I didn't go because there was a blood issue, but that's not it. I didn't go because I thought it was also wrong to be there, because we have no business in Saudi Arabia. And I urge the students, because there's going to be a draft, it's no joke, and the GIs who are still in the States right now, I urge them to do the same thing. This is one thing I've never said before, but I'm saying it today. Don't go.
Thank you, Ronald Jean Baptiste, for that powerful statement. We, of course, call on people to continue calling the 1-900 number to bring the troops home now and to make a statement against the war. Please dial 1-900-44-NO-WAR. Also, you can get in touch with the National Coalition to Stop U.S. Intervention in the Middle East by calling 1-212-777-1246. The struggle continues. Our next speaker is Jaime Veve, a representative of the Latino Coalition Against U.S. Intervention. Please welcome him.
This is WBAI 99.5 FM. You're listening to live coverage from the New School.
Compañeros, compañeras, I will have to really be very brief. But I wanted to bring into mind also another great African-American leader whose birthday will also be within the next period, and that is Malcolm X. who synthesize the life of struggle and the necessity to understand what that struggle is about and to utilize the historical knowledge in order to pursue the struggle. And he did say that of all our studies, history is best qualified to reward our research. It has a lot of significance. As Latinos, that has a lot of significance, because this crisis that we are facing today is inseparable from our historical experiences as Latinos, both here in the U.S. and, of course, in our continent of South, in our homeland of South America, the Caribbean, and Central America. It's inseparable. We, without expanding, understand fully the question of invasion, expropriation of land and property, sanctions, economic blockade. We only have to mention Panama, the canal, as the compañera has already mentioned, Puerto Rico, 92 years of colonialism, Cuba, the economic blockade, Santo Domingo, 1965, Nicaragua, Haiti. All of this is reflective of our historical experiences as Latino Americans, Latinos. And here at home, of course, without expanding, we also have a historical experience which dictates how we view this crisis. I want to take a little issue with the terminology draft dodger, because it's different to avoid the draft because you are a coward and you have economic means to escape it and are unwilling to really fight like quail. And Latino and black and poor white people, working class, who refuse to join the draft because they refuse to fight an unjust war. I came of age during the Vietnam War. I refused. I refused and did not draft Dodge. I refused and made a statement to the military that I refused to serve in the U.S. Army. It's a different thing. Latino casualties in Vietnam were 20% of, in which we only represented 5% of the U.S. population. That's an incredible figure, one that will obviously be magnified in the present war danger. And just in summing up, I just read that another military unit from Puerto Rico is being sent to the Gulf, and it is an elite medical unit being sent. And this comes in the light of the drastic medical condition of Latinos, both from Puerto Rico and generally in Latin America, but also here at home. They just released the government report just this week, headed by the U.S. I forget the title, but the medical head of the medical Surgeon General. Yes, thank you, Surgeon General, who happens to be Puerto Rican, showing drastically the relationship and conditions of Latinos medically. One-third of Mexican-Americans without health insurance. One-fifth of all Puerto Ricans without health insurance, and the report was very extensive. And I thought of the contradiction. He was sending an elite medical unit to the Gulf of Puerto Ricans, and we have only 5% of doctors in this country who are of Latino heritage. It's an immense contradiction. Compañeros, compañeras, as Latinos, we have, and we are, as Simón Bolívar, the emancipator of Latin America, once said, condemned to be located near North America. We know full well the historical experiences of aggression and imperialism and invasion, as the most recent example, naked aggression of Panama, a continuation of over 80 invasions in the last century. And that is why, when we look at our historical experiences and we bring that up to the new generation, and they closely examine the historical patterns, we know that the Latino population in this country, the Mexican Americans, the Cuban Americans, the Dominicans, and the growing wave of Central Americans, and of course the Puerto Ricans, who have been victims of 92 years of colonialism and over 40 years in this country, we will be also, not in the front lines in the Gulf, in the front lines of all and any mobilizations to end the war. Thank you.
WBAI New York.
We just want to say one word of respect and support for the people of Cuba, who not only led the way in opposing every vote in the United Nations against this war, but who have said that they are leaving a team. They have left several hundred doctors and nurses in Iraq. Our next speaker is Sally Fawaz from the Palestine Aid Society.
Brothers and sisters, I would like to start this by inviting my Arab American community and my Palestinian community to join us tonight, tomorrow at 5 o'clock, and Saturday, January 19th, for a demonstration in Washington, D.C., for a demonstration for peace and no war. Our Palestinian community, our Arab community, demands that we depart from the text. The war is going on now, and our people, Palestinian, Iraqi, Kuwaiti, Saudi Arabians, and Americans, are being killed tonight. And we want to voice this opposition. We want to voice our opposition to this killing that's going on in the street. We want to voice the opposition in the street in Washington. We want to voice the opposition in the White House. We call in our community. In the past few weeks, that has been harassed by the FBI and the different intelligence agency to say, don't fear the FBI. Don't fear harassment. Don't fear racism. Come out in the street and deliver your responsibility. Shoulder your responsibility. Our people in Palestine, our people in the Middle East are shouldering their responsibility. And we say to Bush, human rights is indivisible. Democracy is indivisible. Democracy is not for the Israelis. Human rights is not for the Israelis. Human rights is for the Palestinian. Democracy is for all the Arabs. Women liberation is for the Saudi women. Education is for everybody. Health services is for the people in the United States. Liberation and freedom for the people of South Africa. Liberation and freedom for the people of Palestine. Democracy for the people of Haiti. Democracy for the people of Haiti. Freedom from slavery. Freedom from slavery and repression for the people of Saudi Arabia. Freedom from apartheid. Apartheid against Saudi Arabian women. Apartheid against the people of South Africa. Is the destiny, and it is within reach of the people if they go out in the street and demand it. Demand it with their bare shoulder. Demand it with their bare chest. We don't want war. Bring the troop home now. Bring the troop home now. Bring the troop home now. No blood for oil. No blood for oil. Human rights and democracy for the people of Palestine. Human rights and democracy for the people of Palestine. Thank you, and join us for the 19th. And the last thing, we need to bury our differences. We need to be united. We need to be united. United together. United we win.